The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding, and thank you for choosing to spend a little bit of time with me here today. So yes, the dog days of summer, here we are. It's crazy. You know, the fair is now just a couple weeks away, which is the time when my girls, when they were little, they used to love to go to the fair, and we would take them and ride rides. I can tell you that I remember the last ride I ever rode, because when I got off, I said, that's the last ride I'm ever riding. And I just, I don't know. There's something about, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was on a ride with my niece. She's not really my niece, but we call her my niece. She grew up next to us in Kauai, and we've known her since she was four. And I got off that ride, and it just didn't feel good. It wasn't any fun. It just, I don't want to say it hurt, but I just, my head didn't feel right. And I just said, that's it. Never riding another ride. And I used to like to ride rides. I wasn't like, wasn't my number one thing to do, but I used to do them. And so, yeah, so my niece, we'll call her Rachel. We've talked about her. It's been a while. She came out when she graduated from high school. I'm going to say 2019, 2018, before COVID. Well, it would have had to have been 2018. So she came out and she did a year at DMAC in Boone. And then she moved down to Des Moines and did a year of DMAC in Des Moines. And during the time frame that she was there, COVID hit. And then it kind of delayed it. But anyway, in the end, she ended up graduating with her RN, and she went to work at Mercy, and she was in the non-post-surgical, so the non-surgical cardiac ICU, went right into that and did very well. She's really bright. And so she's continued on, and she interestingly met a man from Iowa, and now fast forward, she's doing travel nursing. She's up in Chicago right now. She came back last weekend to do some clinicals because she is getting her Bachelor's of Science in Nursing from University of Iowa. And so, you know, we kind of hung out with her and talked, and she's now talking about getting married to this guy from Iowa. And he actually just been deployed last month or earlier this month to the Middle East. He's in the reserve, but he's got a one-year deployment. And then he'll be back, and now they're talking about getting married, and she's talking about possibly settling in Des Moines, which is nothing I would have ever thought she would. I figured she'd come and do her school and go. I mean, one of the things is Kauai, the island of Kauai, is it's a really magical place. There's just a lot of wonderful things to it. I wouldn't trade my 10 years of living there for anything in the world. But at the same time, when I go back now, I don't know what it is, but I just get the sense that I wouldn't ever really want to live there again. And it's interesting because we love to go on vacation. We have good friends there. Rachel's mom is still there, and we're good friends with her. And we have other friends that are very dear to us. And, you know, we see the island in a way that tourists don't, you know, stay at people's houses and things like that. And but it's just different. And so I can see where, when I go back there, not to mention that the cost has just gone through the roof. I mean, it's a tough situation over there. I mean, people who grow up on that island pretty much now, if there's not a family home to pass down, then they're not going to buy a house on that island. There are a few different ways. There's a thing called Hawaiian homes. And if you're native Hawaiian, you can get a house that you can do what they call self-build. So you get a bunch of your family together and you build it, and the everything's cheaper. The land's cheaper and all that. But the number of those houses is pretty small compared to the number of people that need them. And so for the most part, in general, people who are growing up on that island are never going to be able to live there just by virtue of the fact that it's so expensive. But anyway, I can kind of see that, but it was good to see her again for a few days. And while she did some clinicals, she is inching in on her bachelor's of science in nursing at University of Iowa. And so that's really good. You know, nursing is such a, it's still a good, solid career for people. And I think that, you know, I've mentioned before, DMAC, the quality of education you get for the price is really impressive. I saw her go through that program and I was just really impressed with the whole thing. But yeah, that's what's going on now. She's potentially choosing to live here in Iowa with the young man that she met, and life is interesting that way. I can be certain that I never thought when I was living in Kauai, I never thought I would leave Kauai. And then when things happened with my dad's health and with just the situation of the particular hospital I was in when I left Kauai, I just came back to the Midwest, and I had never even been to Iowa, and here I am. And now my niece may be coming to Iowa. My mom is now moving up to Iowa. My grandmother had died a while back, and I'm certain that if you've been a long-time listener, you remember the stories. I used to go to the truck stop with my grandma and eat chicken gizzards, and did that my entire life. She passed away just after Mother's Day in the house that she bought with my grandfather in 1949, and might have been 44. Anyway, late 1940s, she bought this house with my grandfather, and she lived there and till she was 97 by herself. And once she passed, my mom, you know, she's really missed out on a lot from the girls, because from my daughter's perspective of their growing up, because she's had her husband had some issues with dementia that seems to be getting worse. And so she's had a hard time not being able to either travel with him or has to get somebody down there to kind of stay with him. And even then it can kind of be pretty traumatic. So she's going to move up here, and we're going to be able now that, cause she was my grandmother's really only family. Grandma didn't have, well, my mom was her stepdaughter, and she didn't have any kids of her own, and all of her brothers and sisters and everybody else and my grandpa had been long gone. So mom was her only family. And of course, you know, me, but I was up here. But now it looks like bringing mom. So my family is increasing the population of Iowa. And of course, my daughter, my oldest, is going to be off to college in the fall, not this coming fall, the next fall. So she may be the first one out, because she's got her eyes on a couple of schools that are not in Iowa. And so we're just going to see how all that falls. But it is interesting how your life, sometimes you just end up in a life that you just never would have ever figured on, but it's working out pretty good. We enjoy Iowa, and I enjoy my practice. I enjoy working here in Carroll and enjoy what I do, and feel pretty lucky. It's good to be able to take care of people for a living. I'm always grateful for that. You know, when I wake up in the morning and I express gratitude, try to do that the first thing every morning, because there's so much for everybody to be grateful for. But I do feel especially blessed to be able to do what I do for a living. And when you see a patient that comes in and they really need you really badly right then, and then you fix them up and then you see them later in the clinic, it's just really fulfilling, I guess would be the major word I would use. You know, a lot of times the people in their greatest acute need from me are people with either fractures, which just means broken bones. People, I think, sometimes used to, I don't hear this anymore, but people still sometimes will say, is it fractured or broken? And fractured is just the technical term for a broken bone. It's just, and there's no difference between fractured and broken. Now, there's lots of different degrees of, you know, being fractured. In other words, it can be a fracture that's what we call non-displaced. So if you can see it on the x-ray, but it, the bone is together, there's just kind of a crack in it. I guess the layman terms would be hairline fracture. And I think certainly some doctors have perpetuated that wording, hairline fracture. It's not in the textbooks, but I guess it's one way to communicate it. And what that means is, in other words, that bone has not come apart. And typically those will be treated with immobilization, no matter really. Most bones that are fractured but not displaced are treated with immobilization. There are certainly significant exceptions. So if the hip is fractured, the hip being the ball and socket bone in the pelvis, right? The ball and socket joint in the pelvis consisting of the pelvic bone and the femur. If the hip is fractured, we are always going to fix it. If it's fractured in a weight-bearing portion, there is sometimes there's a thing called the greater trochanter, and that's the part that some of the muscles attach to, and that's not really a weight-bearing portion of the hip. And those are, even sometimes we'll fix those, but those are fairly rare as hip fractures go. Hip fractures basically come in what we call femoral neck fractures. So the neck is just the stem of the bone that goes up to the ball, if you will. If you can imagine that the femur is a long bone that comes up, and then there's a little neck at an angle, and then on top of it, there's a ball. If that neck is broken, we're going to operate on that. And most of the time, 90% of the time, that's going to be a partial hip replacement where we just replace the ball and the neck and not the socket. Now, sometimes you will replace both if there's some arthritis there to begin with. But if there's no arthritis, a lot of times you'll just get the ball replaced. The other type of hip fracture is called a peritrochanteric fracture. So the trochanters are sort of these two little landmarks where muscles attach. And the fracture line will oftentimes go in between those or around and through those anatomic landmarks. And so then what we end up doing is we end up putting a rod inside the femur. And these rods are really nice. They're very well designed to get in and go right where they're supposed to be and just hold that femur so that you can walk on it immediately. That's the kind of the cool thing about the treatment of hip fractures, is that you have a patient who fell and is just not going to stand up. And if you don't fix them, they could potentially never stand up because there's so much depending on them getting up on the hip. And once you fix them, as soon as the pain is under control, they're standing. Some oftentimes they'll stand the day after surgery and walk the day after that, which is just, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty amazing thing that has been engineered. And I, you know, just humbly putting in the implants that were designed by people a lot smarter than me. But so that is one thing that's kind of cool about hip fractures, is that just the immediacy of the beginning of rehabilitation, where, for instance, with a wrist fracture, most wrist fractures, if you're over the age of 80, most of them don't need operations, although sometimes you just kind of have to if it's so terrible. But if you're in your 50s, 60s, 40s, and younger than that, then if your wrist is fractured, a lot of times we'll put a plate on it. And the plate will go right directly on the bone, and then you immobilize it for maybe a week or two and then get the wrist moving. So a lot of the principles that we use for fracture treatment now is early range of motion. And that's something that wasn't as much the case when, you know, 25 years ago when I was training. We certainly have learned, I mean, even with hip fractures, we learned that, you know, you want to weight bear them immediately most of the time. Not always, depends if, you know, sometimes the bone is so bad that you're afraid you just got to let it heal. But we went from sitting people at the partial weight-bearing status for a while to pretty much immediate weight-bearing. And that's one of the things that's been a really big difference, additionally, with joint replacements, is just the immediate weight-bearing. Like, you know, so a lot of them go home the same day or the next day. And so that's been a big change. But back to fractures. So most of the time, if you have a fracture and you're an adult and it's displaced, you're going to end up having an operation. Ankles, for sure. As a matter of fact, if an ankle fracture is displaced enough that you need to put it back where it, what we call reducing. So fracture becomes displaced, and what we do to it when we make it straight is we call, it's called a reduction. That's just the terminology that we use. If your ankle is broken enough that you need it reduced, then you're going to have surgery. Because the other option would be a long leg cast up to your thigh for 6 weeks. And that's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, I don't remember last time I treated anybody in a long leg cast for an ankle fracture. We just typically don't do that. And the tibia, which is the shin bone, when that fractures, again, we're going to put a rod inside that bone and get you bearing weight immediately. The kneecap, when you fracture your kneecap, if it's not displaced, you can be treated in mobilization, and we put a knee immobilizer on you. But if it breaks apart, then you just have to wire it back together with wire and screws and hold it. The femur, like I said, up at the hip, you almost always operate on it. And at the mid part of the femur, what we call the mid shaft, 100%, you always are going to operate on that, because what happens is it breaks, and then all of your thigh muscles are pulling it, so it's going to immediately shorten. So there's just no place if you break your femur. And most of the time, that's either going to be a high energy trauma, or sometimes older people will fracture their femur at the mid shaft. But most of the time, if you fracture your femur and you're older, it's going to be at the top, at the hip, or at the bottom, at the knee. And again, most of the time, we're going to operate on that. And at the hip, you're either going to replace part of it, or you're going to put a rod in. At the knee, you're probably going to put a plate in, or you could put a rod in up through the knee. Move the kneecap over and put a metal rod in. Sometimes you do both. And then every once in a while, if the knee is bad enough in an old enough patient, we'll do what's called a distal femoral replacement. Because if their femur has just, let's say you had a total knee and you broke right at the total knee and there just was not enough bone left to do anything, we can take some of that bone and put like the last 4 to 5 inches of bone will be replaced by metal, and then have the knee replacement on that end of that. And so then, you know, every bone in your body, there's a particular way that we know to treat them, including each bone in your wrist, each bone in your hand, your collarbone. And sometimes they go back and forth. Like the collarbone, we used to fix that all the time with a metal plate. And then for a few years, the studies were showing, oh, maybe we shouldn't. And now we're back to fixing most of those. And how that happens is different studies will look at different things, and the body of evidence will move us in one direction. We don't typically try to change every time we read a new study, because there's a lot of studies coming out all the time, but you try to look at the big body of evidence if you're going to make a treatment change. But I just thought I'd talk a little bit about fractures. I don't talk much about fractures, but I do take care of a lot of fractures. It is a big, big part of orthopedics, and hopefully if you're careful, you won't see me for that. Again, one of the things you can do as you're older is eat a good diet and get lots of exercise, get your vitamin D, and hopefully you can avoid having a fracture. The stronger you are and the healthier you are, the better you'll do. So with that, I guess it's off into the end of summer, and we'll keep at it and coming up on the fair and let you know how that goes with my daughters and their jobs at the fair this year. So with that, you just have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.